FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today's 10-23-20. Well, election coming up, but we don't dwell on such obscene matters. We're more into the economy and into precious metals investing and how to preserve your wealth for what obviously is going to be a very tumultuous trip. And I'd like to know what you're doing about it. Why don't you send me an email? I've gotten a lot from you already. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. We've got Gordon T. Long with us, and we've been talking with Gordon for years about how messed up the credit markets are, subprime autos, subprime mortgages, all these things. But right now, we're going to start off talking about gold, where we kind of left off last time, Gordon.
Oh, Kerry, yeah. We kind of got cut off there last time we got into gold, because I don't think you and I have had a conversation on gold. It's always been on these other subjects you talked about. But we've always been in the gold market. Our precious metals have been a hard part of our, well, part of our hard assets within our portfolio construction. But really last March, when from purely a technical standpoint, is when we really started to increase our precious metals holding. It's turned out pretty well. But frankly, we think we're just at the beginnings of this move in precious metals, Kerry. But now, not just for technical reasons, but also for economic issues of what's happening with the economy and some of the metrics that we use to actually value what gold should be priced at. So we actually see there's going to be, you know, 25% correction in gold or precious metals, even in a bull run for it, is not uncommon. So you make sure you're not on leverage, but you know, stay the course, and if you can hold on, it should turn out all right. But we think 2021 is going to be the big year. And for those that follow Elliott Wave, usually the third wave is the biggest wave of a five count wave. And we're just beginning to enter the third wave. But in gold's case, precious metals, it's actually the fifth that's even bigger, because you get the kind of the blow off top. But Kerry, the reason from a basic standpoint why we're seeing that is that we've found that gold itself, when I'm talking about the spot price of gold here, which is what you have to look at, but the spot price of gold has mirrored the 10-year U.S. Treasury, the real rate of the U.S. 10-year Treasury for, well, at very closely since 2008, and pretty good before that, but it's just incredibly close R-squared on the fit. And so if you look at it, you know, you find yourself watching the 10-year, but the problem with it, and for most investors, is a coincidence. So, you know, you're betting on what's going to happen with the 10-year and the inflation rate specifically, because we're talking the real rate to get to gold. And what we've found to solve that problem is there's a relationship between the 10-year and what we call, or has been called, the Chinese credit impulse. When China pushes huge amounts of money, as it did in 2012, as it did again in 2005, it really pushes a major reflation in the market. And we saw China between March and then again in August have pumped $1.4 trillion into the global market. That is a huge amount for China in a very five-month period. And now here's the trick. That impulse, it leads the market by about 12 months, pretty close to 12 months if you go all the way back to 2008, the various impulses in it. So that would suggest, if the correlation continues to maintain itself, is beginning in Q1 through August, we should have a major surge in yields, pushing up on yields on the 10-year. Treasury. And by the way, that's starting to look like it's happening slowly. We're starting to see some breakouts here in the 10-year, but it'll correlate with the spot price of gold. And I can go on. There's other correlations we have, Kerry, but that's the one that is hasn't failed. You know, you never know. I got to put a disclaimer in here, Kerry. Things sometimes do fail for strangest reasons. But when you look at all the technicals, it's pretty sound. And you see the momentum, you know, the early adopters are certainly well in the last wave. Now you've got institutions and central banks that are making their moves, have been, and eventually the public. And gold, as you know better than anybody, is such a small percent capitalization weighting. It's going to take everything right down to the gold miners, which have been laggards for two decades now.
Yeah, that's for
sure.
They're
starting to move. So I didn't mean to get long-winded, Kerry, but that's kind of what we see. And it gets into also some strong feelings we have of what's going on now between the markets and the economy, the divergence. We've never seen it more major ever. Economic numbers being, frankly, on a global basis, a disaster, and yet the market hitting all-time highs. And why is that? And everybody kind of goes around in circles, but there's very, very clear reasons for it. And it's why this divergence will actually get worse. And it'll be good for gold. And here's the kicker, Kerry. We think it'll be good for the U.S. dollar, because usually when gold goes up, the U.S. dollar goes down and vice versa, right?
Right.
Right now, there'll be some further weakness in both gold and dollar. But we think in the next surge up, actually, the dollar will strengthen with gold. And that's a whole discussion into itself. For more or less the same reasons. It has to do with the amount of money and credit that we are pushing into the global economy. The numbers are astounding.
Yes, they are. No question about that. And you wonder where it's going to end. I mean, the amount of money going there. But we see
and it will end, Kerry.
The
good news is, in the short term, this massive amount of money is going to ignite a reflation rocket. And it's probably out still maybe 3-4 months. And it's going to take markets up with it, equity markets overall. That's kind of the good news. The bad news is the debt that we're incurring to do it has put the global market, our global economies, in such a fragile and major imbalances that the piper someday will have to be paid. But before that piper's ever paid, the only way out is to continue to reflate at higher and higher rates. And that usually leads to inflation, and eventually in a fiat currencies, you get hyperinflation, right?
Yeah. Well,
it's a good news, bad news story, but you know, the world's not coming to an end, and one thing you can count on is that no matter what, when things get bad, governments will change the rules, right? And when they change the rules, anything can happen. I think we had discussions about what quantitative easing was all about and whether it was even feasible back in, you know, 2008, 2009. Now we just take it as mainstream discussion, right?
Yeah, now it's fully acceptable. It's fully accepted and hardly ever questioned.
No question. I don't mean to get off track, but I can remember in 2008, everything was about all the options markets in the banks were marked to market. And that's what we had to do. One of the core reasons we got out of the 2008 financial crisis is we allowed the banks not to have to mark to market. And it made a massive difference with big surge and some other, and the money pumping. But, you know, Kerry, we never reversed that. We never went back and forced the banks to mark to market. Yeah. I have no idea what they mark to it now. And we're talking massive options and swaps here. So we're sitting on in many cases, an illusion of the value of collateral. So, gold is the one solid collateral in the world, hard assets, precious metals.
Yep. And one interesting thing when you look at it is that the Federal Reserve was actually able to reflate that property market, and actually the banks got the indirect bailout because all of the foreclosures they were holding actually became profitable. But nobody's ever talked about that, Gordon. You know, they actually wound up getting saved because reflation, cut rate financing, whatever it took, and the bailouts the banks got saved and wound up making profits in many cases on their foreclosed properties.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNresources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, if you look at what's going has been going on since the COVID and the Fed started pumping over $3 trillion, we're going to have $7 trillion pumped into the U.S. economy between Fed and stimulus. But the Fed facilities, the games that are going on there, that is a whole show in itself, Kerry. It's not much different than 2008, and the winners of this are the big players. Whether in this case, as many corporations in the junk bond market as the banks themselves.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, so, it's a consistent pattern.
Yeah.
Nobody should get upset about it. It's the way it works. And it's like the media that always seems to spin it one way or the other. But if you're aware of it, you know, that's the realities of investing today.
Yep.
You know, when I started in the business, it was, you know, poring over balance sheets, P&Ls, trying to figure out strategies and value. And those days are gone.
Yeah. What's a value investor now, Gordon? Is there such a thing? Are they an endangered species?
Well, it's like savers. Do any of these people exist? But Kerry, as we move further along with the bad news of the amount of debt, even with the games that will be played, we will migrate back to value. The biggest, the huge value is in value today. And it's so significant. It's like commodities. The commodities have been absolutely killed for a couple decades now. And so they've been the money hasn't been going into them that allowed them to build, to expand, to modernize, et cetera. And it's not necessarily that, you know, we're going to have a big industrial revolution that need the commodities, but it's in a lot of the commodities, like soft commodities. Specifically, let's talk about grains and food. And that side of the house, there's all sorts of issues or opportunity there. But when the big techs who are just, the valuations are nosebleed and the breadth in the market is narrowed so much because they're dominated with passive investors and these tech companies are in the indexes that they're buying. The breadth has got so narrow now that the vast majority of stocks are barely back to their 200-day moving average or slightly above. And then you get inside that and get into some of the commodities players and it's even worse. It will change because there's so much liquidity. It will look for safety. And safety will be found in value. Not today, but that's coming. What's in the future. And it's that's coming. Why I think you're seeing movements in the gold mining stocks, too.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Finally.
finally, after it's been, they've been the Maytag repairman of the stock market, the loneliest guys in town, the miners. But, you know, the real ones, and that's the thing, you have to be able to separate the real ones from the... From the ones who are the lifestyle companies and the ones who are just looking to feather their own nests and not actually build companies. But the real ones still were moving ahead on meaningful projects and they were poised.
Kerry, and it's finding those, it's always the case, but never more than in the precious metals miners, finding the real ones. And it's like panning for gold. It's a difficult and arduous process. And years ago, you know, I'm a Canadian. Yeah. And so mining companies are a big part of the Canadian economy. And if you're into investing, you play a big part in looking for those. And it was a tough game. So anybody that wants to get in it, make sure you've got good people advising you on the players.
Yeah, like, you know, I work with mining companies. They sponsor the show, but I have a screen that they have to go through, and they can't be just looking to pump the stock. They've got to have a real company with real finances, real project, a resource, a, you know, a defined resource is ideal, but hey, everybody's got to start someplace, but you're going to pay less if they don't have the resource. And, you know, I look for certain people that I trust in the industry to give me guidance on companies. And as a result, their listeners have done great on these stocks, and there's a lot more to go. You know, right now, Gordon, one thing we didn't discuss is that virtually every gold deposit in the world, even if it's in the Arctic Circle, literally on a on an island, is basically economically feasible right now. Doesn't mean it's going to be developed, but in theory, it could be profitable, and that's something that we have not seen in forever.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. Yeah, so. That's, you know, this is because we've had 20 years of just lack of investment. And so now the feasibility is really there with gold prices now, or the spot prices, you know, hovering in the $1,900 range. It used to be, you know, the break even was around $1,100 an ounce in that kind of area. So it was like, question whether it was really worth major investments unless you saw a big move, but that's not the case anymore. So any kind of well-financed and proven deposits is going to make money at these kind of levels. Ever mind if gold gets pushed up by larger factors to higher levels. It's going to make the return on these players outstanding. And it's been a losing proposition for at least 15 years.
Yeah,
it's been dead, terribly dead money, and in most cases, lost money.
Yeah.
But we're finally ourselves looking in that area now.
You know, it's ironic, Gordon. It's really ironic is that the companies with the worst plays, the worst projects that were the least feasible, that weren't profitable at $1,500 gold, those are the stocks that have run up the most at $1,900, $2,000 gold, because they were literally given up for dead. So you've seen these multiples of returns that have even exceeded the really sound projects that that really have a lot going for them. A little ironic, you know.
But even the big producers, the Barrick Golds, you know, we're an example, Barrick Gold. Not that we ever chose Barrick. We were big holders originally of Placer Dome. I don't know if you recall that company.
Yeah, of course.
And it was taken over by Monk at Barrick, from Barrick. Of course, Monk's now gone. And you know, it was just a dead stock. But we wanted global diversification in producers. So we just always held it in the portfolio. And it was always a bit of a drain on the portfolio, but it paid a bit of a dividend. And we were in it for the long term. We've doubled our money in the last short period of time on Barrick Gold.
A little ironic.
And that's a major global producer. I mean, not that we called it on that one.
Yeah, Barrick is the largest producer, and they got their joint venture with Newmont that's dramatically cut costs in Nevada, where
they got some good management making some good decisions.
Finally.
You know, I'm not trying to pound the boat on Barrick right now, but when major producers like that are making those kinds of moves, you know there's something serious going on here.
Absolutely. Could not agree with you more. Well, Gordon, we got to wrap up here. Just tell us, where's the best place to find you these days?
Well, thank you very much, Kerry. Still at what we refer to as Mata SII. That's MATASII.com. Videos, reports. We have a large free site with a lot of that information and a subscription service for our reports.
All right. And I highly recommend Gordon's research is top-notch. Next time, we'll go back to subprime auto loans because there's a lot that's happened in that space. And Tesla and free energy, low energy prices. We got to go back to it next time, promise me. Hopefully, you'll have another report by then. And
yeah, absolutely. That's a big subject.
Yeah,
fun subject.
And we've been ahead of the curve, ahead of everybody, Gordon, you know.
That's been the problem, Kerry. We've been a little bit too far ahead of the curve.
Hey, you know what they say, Gordon, on Wall Street? There's nothing worse than being right at the wrong time.
Hey, tell me about it.
Yeah. Any questions or comments for Gordon and myself, email us kl@kerrylutz.com. and go sign up for a free newsletter on our website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Gordon, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.